We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And Oladipo wants it again. Approaching 2 minutes to play. With the left hand and authority. McKee gets it in the middle for the win. It's the 4/10 of a second. One of the greatest clutch playoff performers of his generation has apparently done it again.
Yeah!
Chicken. 9 seconds, 8 seconds, 7 seconds. Oladipo to win
another
it.
Another one!
He got
another
it!
One! Another one!
Alrighty, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Setting the Pace on PacersTalk.net. I am your host for today's show, Alex Golden, and of course, I'm usually joined by Kent Sterling. We will be together for the second segment, but to recap that Pacers-Mavericks game, I've got the one and only Jake Elrod with me. Jake, what's going on, man?
Not too much. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing pretty good. And before we get started, I just want to let everybody know that today is your birthday. And, of course, there's nothing you'd rather be doing than staying up late late on a Sunday night to recap some Pacers basketball on your birthday. Is that right?
Oh, of course, man. Stuffed myself to death today and then almost lost it all in that nail-biter of a game. And now we get to talk about it to end the day.
Absolutely. So let's kind of walk through this game here a little bit. Pacers pull it out 112-109. They go 4-1 on the road trip. I mean, that's pretty impressive considering all the injuries that they had. So but before we do that and get into the road trip, I just want to talk about this game. So I wasn't able to watch it live. I'm going to go back and watch it later. But you watched the game. I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, it was a great game to cap off really a Grand Slam road series. I mean, you know, you go 4-1 in this road series, first time since 92. Chris Denaria pointed that out. So that's obviously just a Grand Slam to cap this off. And, you know, it was one of the top five wins of the season, in my opinion. I mean, you can put it up there with the Lakers win, or, you know, the Nuggets win on the road was another huge one. And, you know, it's just right up there with those wins, any of them. And I think it stacks up well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this game. I was able to listen to the last little bit of it. I heard Oladipo hit the go-ahead shot, then he knocked down two free throws. I saw Miles Turner had some really great defense in the end of that series with Dallas coming down trying to score. And it looks like the Pacers really just, you know, came back after Dallas kind of – they were trading leads back and forth basically from what I'm seeing here. And it just seems like the Pacers were able to pull it out in the end, and Dallas wasn't. So let's just start first half. You know, the Pacers were up by six. So after the first quarter, anything that stood out in that quarter to you? You know, fast start, because that's something we've been struggling with?
Yeah, fast start for sure. I mean, I thought, you know, one of the things I was looking at was how was Victor and Aaron going to do with obviously Malcolm being out for this stretch, for an upcoming stretch, and, you know, who knows what other injuries he's going to face in the future. And honestly, I thought they looked good. I mean, I think the fit looks good on paper, and it was just kind of how is Aaron going to look, you know, actually on the court next to Victor, and how is Victor going to look next to him. And, you know, I thought both of those guys looked good. We got off to a really fast start. You know, Miles got involved early offensively, and And, you know, like he's done the entire road trip, he played great offensively and really, I think, sparked the team on that end of the floor, you know, and it was just a situation where the Pacers were kind of able to buck a trend of poor starts. And, you know, I think it really set the tone for the rest of the game. The fact that they were able to put up 31 points in the first quarter, which is something that we've talked often about with this team, that starting unit just doesn't get going the way we expect it to or hope it does. And I think that that was just absolutely huge for them to be able to stay in front of Dallas early on.
How did the bench rotation look with, once again, no Doug McDermott? And, of course, you know, Aaron's playing with the starters now, so he's not playing much with the bench. What did you think about that bench unit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you obviously throw in Edmund Sumner in there a little more. And, you know, I mean, Justin Holiday got his usual 20-plus minutes. You know, Jakar has been continuing to get run. I thought the rotation was good. You know, I like the way that, you know, Nate McMillan subs out Sabonis with Holiday. I like the way he's rotating Sabonis and Turner in together a little more and you know, mix-matching that a little bit better. I think he has more confidence in that duo to rotate them as need be. And, you know, all in all, I thought they did a good job of kind of balancing it. And obviously Justin Holiday, every time he comes in, you know, just seems to impact the game in a positive way on both ends of the floor. So you know, I give him a ton of credit for what he's done. And then Edmund Sumner, I mean, you know, really hasn't gotten any run up until recently, until the injuries piled up, and I think he's done a really commendable job on both ends of the floor, and you know, really earning some of these minutes he's been getting.
Love to see those guys that don't usually get an opportunity, like Jakar, like Edmund, getting a chance now, and they're making the most of their opportunity. They're being efficient, being effective, and doing what they can. But I want to talk now about the Dallas Mavericks. You know, Kristaps Porzingis, 3 of 17. I saw my guy Fauci making jokes about not being able to find Porzingis' shot. So 3 for 17, 9 points, 0 of 5 from 3. What was going on with him in this game?
That was the Miles Turner effect, man. I mean, I thought Sabonis had some good possessions on him as well, but overall, it was just Miles Turner doing what he does. You know, he really locked him down. Porzingis had trouble with him all night. Miles has the length to match him, and, you know, I think he's one of the bigs that, you know, really can't out-muscle Miles, so, you know, it becomes a problem for him with a guy like that with his type of athleticism and length, and, you know, he really just locked him down all night. It was really, you know, the anti-last game where he just really couldn't miss. This game, he wasn't able to make much of anything, and I thought a lot of that was because they really just stuck Miles Turner on him, you know, and didn't allow him to get going, and that was really a key factor in us winning this game.
You mentioned Miles Turner being really effective this entire road trip, and I really think the last, you know, going back to before the All-Star break, that game against Milwaukee, we really have seen a difference in Miles Turner and his style of play and the level of energy that he's playing with. He joked about how coffee has helped him, but what have you seen improve from Miles Turner throughout the last handful of games that has really helped this Pacers team elevate, you know, despite all the injuries?
Well, I think coffee helps everyone, so we can relate to that. But in terms of his game, in terms of his game specifically, it's just a more aggressive guy. I mean, you know, I think occasionally he still needs to just take shots when they're there, you know, but his ability to take guys off the dribble, you know, obviously his defensive intensity. I think also, too, the coaches have done a better job of just putting him on other teams' good scores and letting him work. I mean, he's one of the few players in this league that you can honestly say can guard 1 through 5. I mean, unless it's like, you know, a Kemba Walker, just someone, you know, ridiculously outrageous. But, you know, 1 through 5, you can put him on them and have confidence in that. And they did that tonight. You saw him on Luka. You saw him on Porzingis. You saw him even a couple times on Hardaway on the perimeter. I mean, they really did what they had to do to put Miles in position to make defensive plays. And when Miles is making defensive plays, it translates to offensive plays. And he's doing a much better job of taking advantage of his offensive opportunities, because, you know, a lot of people say Miles needs more shots or Miles needs more plays. That's probably not going to happen just with how spread out our offense is and the guys that we have, like Warren and Sabonis, and now Oladipo's in the fold. And when Brogdon's healthy, he has to take advantage of those opportunities, and he's doing a much better job of knocking down those shots and being aggressive when he has the ball in his hands. And, you know, I just completely agree with you that he's playing much better basketball. He was honestly our X factor in this five game stretch on the road. And, you know, I think honestly he's playing it at a defensive player of the year level right now. This is what we saw last year of him. And, you know, prior to the stretch of the All-Star break, I had honestly felt like his defense had maybe taken a little bit of a step backwards, just in terms of his on-ball defense. And now it's back to the level it was. And I think you're just seeing that translate to the offensive end of the court. And I think that's where his game is bred completely. It's just a defensive minded game. And when he gets engaged and he's active, that turns into the confidence in his shots, confidence in when he touches the ball, and that leads to scores. And I think that's why you're seeing his game just become elevated, and he's becoming the impact type player that we know he can be.
Yeah, I agree with you completely about Miles, because I really believe if he is playing like this, 16 points, 13 rebounds, 3 blocks, I mean, we know that that's probably not going to be a stat line every game, but if he can play with that consistent energy level, I said it a couple weeks ago with Kent Sterling, I really feel like he could be the X factor for this team come a playoff series. And you said it, for this entire road trip, he was the X factor. I mean, even though the Pacers got blown out by Milwaukee, you saw him play some pretty solid defense on Giannis for as good as you're going to be able to put on him. I mean, who else are we going to throw on Giannis on this Pacers team? No one's big enough. No one's, you know, fast enough to stay with him. It's really just impressive to see Miles continue to grow as a player. And I'm excited to see what he does in the playoffs, because that's when it's really going to come down to it, see what him and Sabonis can do in the playoffs. But just to transition here a little bit before we kind of wrap this segment up, TJ Warren came off of an injury, wasn't able to play Friday against the Bulls, back tonight, ends up fouling out. Still pretty productive, though, 7 of 13 for 16 points. What were your thoughts on TJ Warren's return tonight?
I thought he was good. I mean, I don't think he got enough shots. I think, you know, we've been on the same page with this, that TJ Warren probably needs to be up around 17, 18, 19 shots per game. And felt like Victor kind of, you know, was forcing things, especially, you know, in the first half where he was just kind of chucking up shots. And, you know, he needs to learn when to take a backseat to TJ. And I think was one of those nights where he struggled with that and TJ didn't get enough usage. You know, 13 shots, I think, is just a crime when you have a guy shooting, you know, 53% and scoring almost 19 a game. And Dallas was struggling in the paint. I mean, that's another big thing is, you know, this was really a game where TJ Warren could eat them alive, as was Sabonis in the paint. You know, so the fact that he got 13 shots is my biggest issue. But, you know, everywhere else he was good. He had that possession where he fouled Luka 3 times. It was unfortunate. That kind of ended his night. And that's unfortunately probably something you're going to see on a bunch of national highlights. But it wasn't reflective of the game he had. He had a really good game. You know, I commend him for taking that challenge of being on Luka. And, you know, I mean, Luka shot under 50% for the game. I think he was 13 of 26 from the floor. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, you give up 36 points, it doesn't look good in a vacuum. But, you know, if you can hold a guy like that to a low shooting percentage and make him shoot a high volume, that's big for your team. I mean, honestly, Hardaway was the guy that was really just eating us alive on every possession. Doncic wasn't even, you know, really a problem possession after possession. I think Hardaway was much more efficient and much more of a problem on the perimeter. So I thought Warren did a solid job on Luka. And obviously, offensively, we know what he's capable of. I just think the Pacers really need to wrap their head around this is really TJ Warren's offensive team right now until Victor refines himself and gets back to what he was before, if he ever does. And I just still feel like they aren't embracing that right now, and they really need to do that, because he takes his offensive ceiling to the next level when they allow him to go in and just dominate guys. And I felt like they missed an opportunity for him to do that in this game.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up, and we have talked about that a lot off air, because you know, we love Victor Oladipo. We're excited that he's back, and we know that he can do great things. And we saw tonight in the clutch, you know, he got he turned the ball over, got it stolen from him, his shot got blocked, then he came down and hit a big three, or a big shot. So, you know, not a three, just a shot. But it's one of those things where you know Victor is the guy you want with the game on the line. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we've seen TJ Warren with the ball in his hands with the game on the line this year, and we haven't gotten great results. So, you know, I'm fine with, you know, trying to maybe take some of those field goal attempts off of Oladipo, give him to Warren, let him get a little bit more of a rhythm going, because, you know, 33% shooting-wise for Oladipo, it's not ideal. We talked about, we went him around 14, 15 shots a game, you know, shooting around 50%, you know, 0-5 from three, that's going to happen. But I'm glad he's at least out there. He's effective defensively. That's one of the things you can't knock on Oladipo, is his defense has been pretty solid all year since he's come back from that injury, taking charges. Not as great of a defender as he was before the injury, but still, you know what I mean. There's still improvements, and there's still production out of that defensive position from him. But overall, you know, I'm excited about the way this team is playing right now. Despite all the injuries, despite all the adversity, the road trip wasn't that difficult. But to get road wins against San Antonio, against Dallas, you know, going into Cleveland, a team that's got Andre Drummond, that has just, you know, torn the Pacers apart, getting that win, I would say this was a really quality road trip. 4 out of 5, that's amazing to me.
Yeah, and like I said, Denari pointed out, first time since 92 that happened. We've had 3 5-game road trips, and our record is 10-5. So I think that that's a huge X factor. And if we are a 50-win team, I mean, to be able to have that kind of record in those road trips, having winning road trips every single time when you go on the road for 5 straight games, I mean, that shows a lot of resolve, a lot of toughness from this team. And I think they deserve a ton of credit, especially with the adversity they faced recently, losing Malcolm and Jeremy. Doug McDermott, you know, is a big key to their road success, and with him out, that's a huge loss. And I just think all the guys you talked about earlier, Jakar, Edmund, Justin Holiday, has just been such an underrated aspect to this team this year, and I think all those guys deserve a ton of credit. And, you know, obviously, you know, before we go, Domantas Sabonis, I don't know if you know, broke the franchise record, 50th double-double tonight, so congratulations to him. Find it funny that we don't even talk about him getting 20 points, 17 boards, 6 assists anymore. That's where he's at in his career. We don't even talk about that anymore, but congrats to him, because that's a big milestone for him.
Absolutely it is, and you know, the Pacers now are just 2 games back of the Miami Heat for the 4 seed, and the Pacers play their next 5 of 6 at home, and they do get Miami in there coming up, so I think this is a good opportunity. We saw last time the Pacers had a nice little home stretch. They did not play well. Hopefully, they do a little bit better now that they've got some momentum heading into that. They're playing well. Victor's back with the team, hopefully, at a consistent rate. We're still unsure of what Brogdon's injury is going to how long it's going to keep him out. But you mentioned Aaron Holiday, Victor Oladipo. I'm excited to see that lineup. I like the ability of their – I like that they have the ability to play faster, where sometimes I feel like Brogdon can kind of slow things down and be methodical. And it's nice to have someone that's steady and doesn't get in control, but it's also nice to have someone that can push the pace, and this will give Oladipo more of a chance to be the primary ball handler. And I think – you know, even though some of the games we have coming up are going to be tough, I think this is a good opportunity for Oladipo just to get more comfortable with being the ball, the guy with the ball in his hand, coming back from the injury, because he's been playing a lot of off ball, and I think now he's going to be able to get a chance to run that point guard. So, Jake, final thoughts before I let you go, and you know, just what are your feelings on this team right now?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, we talked about it ad nauseum. This was an excellent road trip. I think a key road trip for the confidence of this team down the stretch. Like you said, I think this stretch with Aaron and Victor being able to play together is important, because, you know, we don't know how Malcolm is going to be on a game-to-game basis. And I, in my heart of hearts, I think that if this team is going to go anywhere, they're going to be relying on that backcourt more than maybe we would hope. And you know, with Aaron as at a crossroads in his Pacers career as well, you know, so I think that this run really can cement him as a guy that the Pacers take a long look to bring back on a long-term deal, as, you know, at worst insurance for Malcolm Brogdon, you know, because again, with Malcolm's injury history, we need to have a good insurance policy. And if Aaron and Victor can show good chemistry and play well together and continue to win the way they did tonight, I think he really has a good opportunity to cement himself as a guy that's in line for an extension. And, you know, in terms of the team overall, I'm still, you know, wanting to see how they do down the stretch, but I'm really encouraged from what I've seen from the front court. I think Domas and Miles are really starting to play off each other really well now. They've hit each other, you know, in clutch situations, and, you know, using their ability to block shots and rebound, I think has been huge for the defense. And, you know, again, I really liked what I saw from Aaron and Victor in the backcourt. So hopefully we can get a couple more quality wins to start to feel good about the directions they're heading. But this is like the arc, in my opinion, early in the season where they were losing games early on, and then they started to close out these tough wins against good teams. So hopefully we kind of see that continue to build like we did at the beginning of the season when we were 31-17 right before Vic came back. And I'm hopeful that that's kind of where we're at this point in this Victor comeback saga. Opportunity coming up within the next week or two to be able to eat into that and really set our sights on a top three seed.
Absolutely. Well, you guys can follow Jake on Twitter at JakeElrod44. And once again, happy birthday to you, Jake. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks. Appreciate you having me on, Alex.
And it is Monday, so you know who's joining me right now. The one and only Kent Sterling. Kent, what's going on, man?
Not too much, Alex. You know, this road trip, I think, has so far been terrific. Another game to go, but, you know, I think things are getting a little bit exciting for the Pacers.
Yeah, I know. There's no doubt about it. Obviously, throughout this road trip, we haven't played Dallas as we are recording right now. We have not played Dallas yet, but you got three wins on the road. You lost to Milwaukee, which was just a brutal loss, and I think that was expected because Milwaukee was coming off a loss to Miami the night before, so or the day before, I believe, a couple days before that. So it's one of those things where the Pacers really just, you know, have taken care of business when they needed to. But unfortunately, I want to start things off talking about the news of Malcolm Brogdon. So what exactly was that injury again?
Well, it's got something to do with a quad complex of muscles, and he's listed week to week, and I don't really know what that means for the Pacers. I know with the Colts it means 2 to 4 weeks. You could kind of, when Pagano or when Reich say week to week, you can book it as a 2 to 4 week deal. So if this is 2 to 4 weeks with Vic still kind of recovering from the swelling on the knee, played the other night in Chicago, but you know what, all this talk about Lance, it kind of makes sense because they need bodies.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. So we haven't even got into it yet, but of course, on Sunday we have seen the news that the Pacers are in negotiations with Lance Stephenson. So if by Monday morning there's a signing on that, we will know more details. But for now, we know that the Pacers are still in talks with Lance. And, you know, Jeremy Lamb goes down, Malcolm Brogdon's injured, Victor's not fully healthy. What are you going to do? I mean, you're running out of bodies there at the guard position.
And he knows all the coaches. They know him. His coaching staff has been static since Lance was last here. Some of the guys on the team, they know how to play with Lance and have done that. So this isn't like a jarring addition to the roster that's going to cause a lot of upheaval and a lot of, you know, you're going to have to assuage egos in the locker room and coaches are going to have to figure out how a guy rolls. Lance is going to be kind of a plug-and-play guy. And with 18, 19 games left in the season, it's exactly what you need. Plus, he reinvigorates the fan base a little bit. Everybody loves Lance. It's so interesting how people took to Lance. There's a real kind of link but in an affinity from Pacers fans to Lance Stephenson that just it doesn't exist anywhere else. And so him coming back here, you know, it's going to put butts in seats when he reports for the first time, assuming this deal gets done. You know what? Fans are going to go crazy, and 60-some-odd games into the season, we need a little bit of that.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. We need this energy. It's been kind of dull recently. It's like, you know, you're beating the bad teams. You're losing to the teams that are really good when they're healthy. And, you know, you just want to see something different. And I think that that's definitely what Lance brings to the table now. As far as his skill goes, what exactly does he, or how exactly does he fit in with this team? Do you like, you know, what he brings to the table?
Well, there's some things that he does really well. He's not a terribly good shooter. We all know that. Not a good shooter from deep. But what he does do is when he is motivated, he's a pretty good defender on the wing. Mm-hmm. And he's always been a good rebounder. There are things that he provides the last 2 years. 17-18 with the Pacers and then 18-19 with the Lakers, he really played reasonably well. I mean, his statistics were nice. His win shares, nice. I thought he was mostly – we used to talk about bad Lance, good Lance. I think the last time he was here, we saw most of the good Lance.
Yeah, I agree with that. It was kind of shocking the Pacers declined his team option, specifically since it was so cheap, and he ended up going to the Lakers and, you know, kind of became a air guitar star out there on a team that wasn't doing anything, and then ultimately that got him over to China. So we saw him not too long ago back in Indianapolis at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. The fans were crazy excited when he came, and then Lance was sending out cryptic videos on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, trying just to really tease the fans, because I think it was more of a tease the fans, but also like, hey, you know, Pacers organization, I'm ready to play if you guys need me. So I think there was a little bit of both of that, but I'm excited just to see him out there. I will never forget when he came back against the Toronto Raptors a couple of years ago, and the Pacers really needed that energy to win those games, because if they don't win out, I believe they don't even make the playoffs that year. So Lance comes back, and I tell you what, Kent, that place, that arena, was probably more electric for Lance's return than they were when Paul George returned from the injury.
Well, Lance has got charisma, and Paul completely lacks charisma. So there's a good reason for that, despite the, you know, the inverse proportionality to their quality of play. Mm-hmm. Lance is likable. Paul was never likable. And so people just, and you can read Lance's face, right? When Lance is happy, he looks happy. When Lance isn't happy, he doesn't look happy. He is completely transparent in his behavior, and we like that around here. So, you know, good. Again, and you know what? From a shooting perspective, last year, he was a 37% guy for the Lakers from beyond the arc. So he got a little bit better with the Lakers. It might have helped that he was playing with LeBron. And so LeBron is taking a lot of defensive attention away from Lance. But he didn't shoot badly last year. So maybe he can come in here, give a little bit of an infusion of energy, a little bit of change of pace, get the fans a little bit amped. And, you know, maybe that helps this team win a couple of games that they wouldn't have otherwise won, because they're in a position now, two games behind the Heat, a half game ahead of the 76ers, where they've really got an opportunity. You know, it's still there with just, I know we're recording this with 19 games left, but 18 games left now, and depending on what they do against the Mavericks, they're in pretty good shape for that fourth slot where they could arrest home court advantage for the first round of the playoffs.
I mean, I think that'd be huge, especially with a guy like Lance on the team. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I'm just excited to see how he fits, because I think there are some question marks. How does he play off ball? How does he play next to a guy like TJ McConnell, who is a non-3-point shooter, even though he did hit one on Friday night, I believe it was, against the Bulls. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, where does he fit in with this team? Obviously, he's not going to start. But, if you're looking at a backcourt with Brogdon being out in that second unit, you're looking at Edmund Sumner. McDermott's hurt, too, as well, with that sore foot, so we'll see how long he's out. But you're looking at Edmund Sumner, Lance Stephenson, and McConnell with Sabonis and Justin Holiday. That does not sound very scary, and not a lot of three-point shooting out there.
And it's really too bad, because Doug McDermott was shooting his ass off, right? I mean, he was just money in the bank. And for him to go down at this point when, you know, he was just kind of becoming that player that everybody hoped that McDermott would be with the Pacers when he signed here a year ago is really too bad. But they do need bodies, and Lance coming in, you know, and don't, you know, limit Lance, and don't think of Lance as the Lance that's been here previous. Lance is playing for money, right? Lance, how he plays, if he signs with the Pacers, you know what? If he plays well, he's going to make himself a lot of money next year. If he doesn't play well and isn't a team first guy, he's going to cost himself a lot of money. He knows what's at stake from a business perspective. And so I would expect Lance to be as good as Lance can be.
So my last Lance question before we move on to other basketball stuff regarding this team, do you think that this is probably the last 10-year we see with Lance, or do you think that they possibly bring him on? I mean, do they bring him on next year? Do they continue this?
I don't think you bring him back next year. I don't think there's a spot in the rotation for him. Mm. You know, if everybody's healthy, if Lamb comes back healthy, although that's a big question mark with the injury that he suffered.
Yeah.
Brogdon's long-term health, hell, I don't know when he's going to be. That guy has suffered more injuries to more different parts of his body than anybody I've ever seen in a single NBA season. Mm-hmm. Victor, can you count on Victor? If all these guys project as healthy next year, I don't think there's any room at the inn for Lance Stephenson. But while he's here for the third go-round, again, if he signs that deal, and if the Pacers offer him that deal, you know what? Good for everybody. It's going to be fun, and that's the name of the game.
Long, but our man Jordan S underscore 333 wants to know, if we did re-sign Justin Holiday, what do you think the deal would look like?
Yeah, you cut out just for like the last 3 seconds of the question. If we re-sign Justin Holiday, what do you think what
The deal would look like?
Oh, wow. That is a really interesting question. Justin Holiday, I think, has been far better than I anticipated he was going to be. Who could go get you buckets periodically, but I had no idea he was going to be this kind of leader, that he was going to be this kind of teammate. And really, I think as you look at Justin Holiday and his statistics, you know, I mean, Justin's a guy, he's played, I think, in every game. He's playing 25 minutes a game. He's averaging 8.3 points. I think he's been terrific. I think he's been pretty good defense, be better than you thought. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's, a 2-year, $15 million guy. Maybe it's a little overpriced, maybe 2 years, $10 million. Mm-hmm. But, he's as good as he's going to be. You know that, but I think he's been a key component to what this team wants to do, and a key component for his brother, trying to get him kind of schooled up as to be kind of a competent NBA player behaviorally.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see what that deal looks like as well, because if he plays really well in the playoffs, there could be teams that offer him more money than the Pacers are able to even offer him. And I also wonder, would he be willing to take a hometown discount to be with his brother Aaron? If he likes it here, if he really likes the way the organization is run, his role on the team, being that veteran guy, does he want to stay in Indiana? That's also something, because he's been a player that's moved around a lot. Maybe he wants to settle down. So, you know, I actually don't think that the 2 for $15 sounds too bad, because I think right now he's making around $4 to $5 million. So I think he'll get a little bit of a pay raise because of the success he's had, but I'm not sure how significant, and I'm sure the Pacers do have a cutoff, but I think 2 for $15 sounds pretty reasonable, Kent, but let's move on. We're going to check here with, he said, just call me Smith. So Smith wants to know, does the Brogdon injury allow Edmund Sumner back into the rotation? Question one. Oof. And question two, do you think we have the possibility of Oladipo playing some spot point guard since Aaron is better off the ball? So I'll let you tackle whichever one you want to tackle first.
Yeah, I think that'd be the second one first. I think Oladipo can play some point. He likes to handle it. He's your primary playmaker. He's the dynamic guy. I think it makes all kinds of sense to have him be a primary ball handler. And I don't think that there's a point guard, a wing, a 2 or a 3 in the league that he can't defend. Mm-hmm. So I think it makes sense. I think what the Pacers really enjoy is like being a little bit positionless in the way they deploy. So, maybe the question is a little bit arcane from that perspective, but I think certainly he can play some point. And what was the other thing?
It was, does the Brogdon injury allow Edmund Sumner back into the rotation?
Well, I hope not, because Edmund can't defend me, so that's problematic. I mean, from an offensive perspective, he's not terrible. But defensively, he's the guy that people immediately pick on. If he comes into the game with meaningful minutes, teams, they scheme immediately at him as the weakness on the floor. He's skinny, and he's a guy who's not quick enough necessarily to defend a quick wing. I don't like Edmund Sumner as part of the rotation. He's a plenty nice guy, but if they've, and that's why you're thinking about signing Lance. I mean, if Edmund Sumner was thought of by the Pacers as being a guy who could fill time on the wing, play 20 minutes a game and not get you killed, nobody would be having a conversation with Lance Stephenson.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but if you recall at the beginning of the season, he was Nate's first wing off the bench. to start it. So I think Nate likes him. I think that he's actually maybe he is a little bit thinner, but I think that he's actually created some nice plays defensively for the Pacers, getting his hands in the passing lanes. He's quick. He can get to the basket. I think there are nice different aspects about his game that I do like. I don't think he's a great offensive shooter. We've seen some of the shots he's taken and where they've landed, and it's not been pretty. He's very streaky in that aspect of his game. So personally for me, like, I'm okay with seeing Edmund Sumner in the rotation. But, I mean, at the same time, he's not, like, going to play a significant amount of minutes. I think, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, 12 minutes maybe, just to kind of give some energy off the bench might be beneficial. You know, the whole Lance coming back thing is interesting, and I think that you might be onto something there with them bringing Lance back. It might mean that Sumner is someone they don't trust, but maybe that's more for the playoffs because of his size and, like you mentioned, teams attacking him on that defensive end. But I don't think he's, like, horrific defensively. That's just me watching. I think that he's spotty. I think that he's okay. I don't when I think of Edmund Sumner, I think of a guy that is always going to be struggling to get minutes on a good team rotation-wise. I mean, for crying out loud, when fully healthy, Aaron Holiday wasn't getting in the rotation. And Aaron Holiday, to me, is leaps and bounds better than Edmund Sumner. So that's just kind of where I'm at. I get what you're saying, and I agree with part of it, but I don't necessarily think he's, like, horrific defensively like you mentioned.
He'll make plays, but he'll also make negative plays.
That's fair.
And victory will favor the team that makes the fewer mistakes. And Edmund Sumner will make mistakes in reading things defensively. Sometimes it works out to his benefit. Sometimes it doesn't. And I mean, Edmund Sumner is a terrific basketball player, right? Or he wouldn't be earning NBA money. True. But if he's a part of your rotation, I think you're going to lose a significant number of games. I don't think he's the answer defensively for the Pacers. And I agree that Nate at the beginning of the season liked Edmund Sumner. And then as the season has evolved forward, he has liked him less and less.
Well, he also got injured. I think that played a big part in it, too. Because when he went down with the injury, that's when everything started changing for the rotation. But that's besides the point. Obviously, he wasn't good enough to come back and take his position back when fully healthy. So let's move on. Sure. We got a couple here that are kind of similar, so I'll read both of these. Mark Schindler, at the _ full court, he said, "It seems pretty basic, but the idea of Sabonis becoming a league-average three-point shooter on 2 or 3 attempts per game is pretty tantalizing. I think if he really worked at it and getting into the flow of shooting them, he could do it. Could really expand the offense." And then Naptown Hoops, he said, "If Sabonis develops a three-point shot, about where in the league would you rank him as a player?" So first, just talk about Sabonis maybe getting up a few more attempts per game, and then talk about if he were to develop a three-point shot, where would you rank him at in the NBA?
You know, here's the thing. Because you can't have him do both, right? You can't have him be underneath as your primary offensive rebound guy and have him shoot threes. So you've got to kind of pick your poison. I think that Domas Sabonis is an elite-level rebounder. I don't think he's an elite-level three-point shooter or capable of becoming an elite-level three-point shooter. He could be good. He could be maybe a 35-37% guy shooting threes. He could be a terrific stretch five, but that's not the way the Pacers play. Because then you completely nullify the advantage you have with Domas being such a commanding rebounder of the basketball. So I think they've kind of picked their poison, and they want Domas to be where he is and not fire up threes. Because if you station him 25 feet from the bucket, he ain't gonna get a lot of looks at offensive rebounds and putbacks.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a fair point, but I also think why would it not hurt for him to take a couple a game? I don't think if he takes 2 or 3 a game,
that's no, that's really fine.
You know, that allows him to stretch his game out a little bit and make people respect him on that. So now they're going to be more, you know, if he starts knocking those down at a consistent rate, then teams are really going to have their hands full with him. So I think, you know, he could do both. I don't see them, you know, force feeding him like they do with Miles in the pick and pop. I still think him being more of a pick and roll or a dribble handoff guy is still something that he should do. But I think at times he should be able to, you know, spot up whether it's a dribble handoff to McDermott or McDermott's driving because they're overplaying the three and Sabonis stays out. Where I think, you know, if he gets a couple open looks like that, if he can knock those down at a good rate, I think that makes teams have a harder time defending the Pacers. And we know Sabonis is not a great dribbler, but he's a really good decision maker. So I don't think he's going to become a guy that just forces a lot of threes. But if he could develop a three-point shot and be consistent, I mean, I'm saying he's – I mean, I don't even know where he's at right now as far as big man in the NBA, but I'd say if he can get a consistent three-point shot, I'd definitely have him in my top 10.
I would too. He averages 12.5 rebounds a game, and he takes 1.1 three-point attempts. He makes 25% of them. He is also an insanely good passer.
Oh, yeah.
He is so good at hitting guys in stride as they attack the bucket. I like everything that he does. I know that you'd love to see him be a 24-point-a-game guy and knock down a couple of threes a game. Maybe if he played for the Warriors, that would be the role that he'd have. But he just makes winning plays. And whatever it takes to win, I think that that's what Sabonis is all about. And so wishing for him to become competent at something that he doesn't do very often, I get it. And if I was his agent, I would talk to the Pacers and I would talk to Sabonis about taking more three-pointers. But, man, that dude, like, how many games do the Pacers lose because of anything that Sabonis does? And how many games do they win because of his level of tenacity on the boards and his ability to dish and set good screens in that pick and roll? I mean, he has been terrific this year. Maybe, you know what? I mean, he's 23 years old, right? So at the age of 23, almost 24, he'll be 24 in May. You know, he's still got development to do, and he might be a different player at the age of 28 in 4 years than he is today. And that might be a part of that arsenal, and I hope that it is.
Yeah, well, let's move on. We have two more questions here.
Sure.
Well, two more people that have submitted questions. This person has two questions. And their first question is, what is the biggest key to unlocking this roster's talent? This is Billy Osborne. He wants to know, what's the biggest key to unlocking this roster's talent? He said, I feel they are more talented than what we are seeing this year. And he wants to have an excuse other than injuries for an answer. So, there you go, Kent.
Here's a question. Here's the answer, but you don't get to use it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. All right, Alex. And from my perspective, that question itself reveals what's really, really fun about this team. And that's that these guys do whatever is necessary to win. And sometimes that requires guys to subvert their personal needs in favor of the team's needs. And I think that that is why the Pacers right now are at 38-25 instead of, you know, flirting with 500 and kind of being maybe just on the inside and maybe in danger of falling out of the playoff chase, because these guys aren't selfish. They're not saying, hey, you know, I can shoot threes. Have me shoot threes. Mm-hmm. They're doing what's necessary to get this team wins. I don't think that these guys figuring out how to unlock their individual talents is the road to success for them to, you know, post more wins. I think those guys making the conscious decision, you know what, this is what my team needs in order to compete. This is what I'm going to give them. I think that's one of the special attributes of this team.
Yeah, it's a really tough question when you can't use the injury as an excuse. But as far as what's the biggest key to unlocking this roster's talent is, I don't really know. I think that it's just continuing to buy into what the coaching staff is asking of them to do. And maybe it is bringing in Lance Stephenson, someone to ruffle some feathers, add some much-needed energy. I do like the fact, we talked about this with Aaron Holiday, I like the fact that he never thinks that he commits a foul. I like the fact that he gets animated. I feel like too many guys on this team are just so passive-aggressive with their personalities. You'll see TJ Warren every once in a while. I think he almost got himself a technical foul. If he didn't against Milwaukee, he was super upset about a non-foul call. And I kind of like when I see guys get upset about things and not just go through the motions. I want to see some chippiness, and maybe that's something that Lance could do. Maybe he could come in there and ruffle some feathers and just bring some extra needed energy, and maybe the guys can feed off that. I mean, McConnell's been doing his part, but imagine McConnell and Lance out there together, you know, just diving on the floor for loose balls and just, you know, Jakar Sampson coming down the lane, Lance throwing a no-look pass to him for a dunk. I think the crowd is going to erupt at that moment. But the biggest question he asked here is a two-part question. He wants to know, who do we keep for next year and who do we let go? So that's a pretty big question there, Kent. It's going to be tough.
Okay, let me go back to the original question for just a second, because I think that there's another flaw in that question, and that's that it sounds like the guy thinks that somehow there are players on this team that are not playing up to their potential. Before this season started, if I told you that T.J. Warren was going to be as prolific a scorer as he's been, you'd probably be happy with that, right? Mm-hmm. You would have said, okay, that exceeds my expectations. T.J. McConnell has exceeded expectations. I think that Jeremy Lamb, prior to the injury, probably exceeded expectations. Domas Sabonis being an all-star, nobody at the beginning of the year, I don't think, thought he was going to be an all-star. Maybe Miles Turner is a guy you point to and say, well, you know, we sure would like to see him score 15 a game and go get 8 rebounds. You know, but other than that, I think these guys have sort of met their expectations or exceeded them. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the other question, I think I don't know why anybody other than Justin, if somebody rolls out kind of a Brinks truck for him, or not maybe a small Brinks truck, and pays him more than what the Pacers are willing to pay him, I don't know why you let any of these guys go. They're all virtually under contract. I don't need to make a bunch of trades in the offseason. I'm really happy with this. We've had so much chaos, right, with this roster because of contracts and whatnot, that we've had to say goodbye to guys and hello to a bunch of other guys. I think really stability is the key for this team in the offseason. So I think it's going to be a real quiet offseason for Pritchard and the guys.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we love to see transactions because we're just so hungry for news and we're so hungry for transactions. But, you know, I forget, it might have been Jackie McMullen or somebody was saying, I can't remember who said it, but they were talking about the Celtics back with Larry Bird. They just felt like they were ahead of the game. It might have even been back in Bill Russell's time. It might have been on Bill Simmons' podcast. He said Bill Simmons felt like they are not Bill Simmons. Bill Russell said that he felt like their team was always ahead of everybody because of the roster continuity. And that's something I think that we overlook and value is team chemistry, because look at the teams that won a lot with the Pacers earlier. I mean, it was just consistently the same guys, the same core. You might add another like role player into it, but you're not trading, you know, a starting player for just to make a move. You're not just making moves to make moves. And I think personally, like you said, if Holiday's too much, let him walk because you can't afford it. You're going to have the mid-level exception. Bring in another guy that can maybe do something similar to what Holiday did and just continue to grow from within. The core of this team is super young, and that's why the Pacers front office built this team the way they did this summer. A lot of young guys that can grow together, and I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think they've done a good job at that. And I think that this past offseason was the big one where you were going to see the change, and I think that this thing is solid moving forward. And, I mean, you've got for this, not next year, but the year after, you've still got Brogdon, Sabonis, Turner, Warren, Lamb, Holiday, Aaron Holiday, Goga, my guy, and Sumner under contract. And so, yeah, and you're still paying Monte Ellis $2.25 million. Hopefully that's the final year.
Veteran leadership
have
right
to
there.
Pay him. Yeah, no kidding. But you've got a roster that's really going to be able to move forward with the Pacers, you know, for a number of years, a multitude of years. And I think that's going to be a great source of strength for this team as long as the guys can stay healthy.
Absolutely. So the last question here, it is from our man Slick at Rick_Kelly. He wants to know, can the Pacers sustain without Brogdon? If so, who will fill his void?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's going to be kind of filling the void by committee, right?
Yeah.
If you're talking about replacing the points and the rebounds and the assists, because he's kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. And as a result, I think it's going to be, you know, replacing him by committee. I think it's going to be really difficult. I think he's a terrific leader. He understands how to communicate with guys. And so the sooner he's back on the court, the better, as long as he's healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that there's an opportunity for us to see Justin Holiday get more minutes.
Thing.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
I hope so.
Yeah. I would like to see Justin Holiday get more minutes at the two guard, maybe with Vic at the one. just to go a little bit bigger, kind of how they envisioned already with Brogdon at the one. Aaron Holiday has been really good, even though he's not been getting a ton of points up. I still think he's been really good and really figured out a way to be productive without having to score the basketball, which is something we wouldn't have been saying, you know, 3 or 4 months ago. It just continued to develop growth by him. And then, of course, TJ McConnell, someone that we both love, has just been that steady hand all year long. And I think we saw it in the Milwaukee game. He was honestly better on the court that game than Brogdon was, just because of the way he was playing with energy, the hustle he was playing with. He brings a different style to the team. And I think that having a veteran leader like that out there, like McConnell, you know, those three guys can really do their best to fill the void, but I don't think any of them can fully replace what Brogdon brings to the table.
Yeah, I think that Holiday's one of those guys, you got to work defensive matchups in your favor as you can, but offensively, you know what? Maybe with Brogdon being an outstanding defensive player and being gone, maybe you do up the pace a little bit, because you're going to need to maybe you're going to be a better team pushing the basketball rather than working through the half court as much as you do, and not be as much a plotting team as they've kind of been if you migrate toward Justin Holiday getting those minutes.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about it. Well, Kent, we've talked for a lot longer than we usually do on this episode, but it's always good to have fans chime in, ask questions, and us to talk about them. Whether they agree or not, let us know. If there's anything that you disagree with that we said, let us know on Setting the Pace 3. You can find me at Alex Golden NBA, and of course, Kent is at Kent Sterling, and we're going to be right back, and I'm going to do a segment solo here to close out the show. But Kent, good talking to you as always.
Good talking to you, and you know what? If people think somehow we were wrong, they need to look in the mirror and decide to learn a little bit more about basketball, because we're never wrong, Alex.
All right, I'm not going to say that I'm never wrong, because I'm open to say that I am wrong, because I've been wrong before. But I would say I think I know more than I know less, if that makes sense.
Well, there you go.
All right, everybody. We will talk to you guys next week. So I wanted to look at the 8 playoff teams in the Eastern Conference and give 3 words to describe each team. So first up, the first place, Milwaukee Bucks. Fear the deer. That's their slogan, and I think that they have an incredible identity. They have a great player, the back-to-back MVP, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. They have surrounded him with size, shooting, and incredible defense. Brook Lopez, a great defender. Chris Middleton, a really solid defender. Eric Bledsoe, a good defender. Wesley Matthews, another good defender. This team has got all the right pieces around Giannis. That's exactly what they wanted to do. They've got their identity figured out. They're going to be tough to beat, and there's a reason that they're on pace to win, I think, close to 70 games this year. So, yes, they are the team to beat. They're hard to beat at home. And, yes, we've seen Milwaukee struggle with certain matchups in the Eastern Conference, but ultimately I think they have a chip on their shoulder. They could have easily been in the NBA Finals last year if Game 3 goes just a little bit different. They were up 2-0 against Toronto. I think Milwaukee is a team to beat. Now, I did pick the field against Kent Sterling last week, but I'm just telling you, fear the deer. They are good. Moving on to the Raptors. 3 words to describe them. Great without Kawhi. A lot of people, even myself, were not sure about what this Raptors team was going to look like, what they were going to be. I, for one, thought they were going to trade their veterans in Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, and try to build from their young guys in Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, that group. But they have just been incredible. Despite injuries to Gasol, they've just continued to win games, and they're in second place in the Eastern Conference for a reason. Kyle Lowry, unbelievable season form. They've got versatility. They've got experience from last year, and they've got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. People were counting these guys out just because Kawhi and Danny Green left. They're like, listen, we're still a really good basketball team. Oh, yeah, and they've also got possibly the coach of the year and Nick Nurse. So let's move on to the Boston Celtics. 3 years for them, not title contenders. Might be a little bit harsh. Don't buy this team being a title contending team. They've got size issues. Daniel Tice, 6'7" center, really good defensively. Can he hold up in matchups where they have to go against the size of Milwaukee, the size of Philadelphia? I don't think they can. I mean, we don't know if they're going to play Philadelphia, but if they don't go against them, I mean, it's just going to be tough for Daniel Tyson. I think the Pacers even have a little bit of a size advantage against Boston. You know, Kemba Walker, injury problems so far. We're not sure what that's going to look like. Gordon Hayward, been up and down all year long. Just a guy that you can't really rely on to be great every night. Jason Tatum is the only great player they have on their team, and he has been really awesome. But their bench depth is terrible. I don't like it at all. Outside of Marcus Smart, they have very inexperienced bench, and Enes Kanter, who is, you know, famously known for can't play Kanter from Billy Donovan, don't trust that team. So let's move on to the Miami Heat, the surprise team. Yeah, nobody expected the Heat to be this good. We thought they might take a little bit of a jump with Jimmy Butler, but no, they have completely changed things around. They got rid of Whiteside, put Bam Adebayo into the starting center position. He's become an all-star. Myers Leonard, they traded for him. He's been really good for this team. Kelly Olynyk's been good at times. Duncan Robinson, outstanding shooter. Tyler Herro, outstanding shooter. Kendrick Nunn, unbelievable point guard form. Then they go out and trade for Solomon Hill, Jay Crowder, and Andre Iguodala, pretty much just for Justice Winslow and James Johnson. So, I mean, really, and Deion Waiters, of course, too. So they got rid of guys that weren't even in the rotation, a guy that was hurt, for three guys that they want to play with their small ball lineup. They're going pretty small here. Like the experience, this team is going to be tough to play in the playoffs. Trust me, Eric Spoelstra coach teams with this level of talent. They're going to be tough. Moving on to the Philadelphia 76ers. Three words to describe them: to be determined. Yes, we don't know what Philadelphia can be because we have not seen them fully healthy for this last stretch of the playoffs, or the regular season, I mean. So you got Ben Simmons with a back injury. Very scary. Does not look like it's going to be good. If he misses the playoffs, I think that really hurts the Sixers' chances of being, you know, what a lot of people predicted to be an Eastern Conference Finals or Finals contender. Joel Embiid, an incredible basketball player. No matter if you like him or not, the dude can be the best player on the court in almost any series outside of the Bucks, where Giannis will more than likely be the better player, but Embiid can hold his own. He's that good. They've got tons of size. They're shooting. They got a little bit better by the trade deadline. Not great shooting, but still, they've got really good pieces here. They're a team that I would be afraid of in the playoffs. So let's skip the Pacers. Let's go to the Nets. Three words for the Nets: a year away. Mediocre talent. They just fired their coach on Saturday, Kenny Atkinson. A lot of leadership issues, in my opinion, here. Looks like Durant and Irving are calling the shots, and they're not even playing this year. Like, just let the year finish out if you're not even playing. And, you know, they've got good young pieces with Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen. What are they going to do with those guys? We don't know about the future, but for this year, I think they're good enough to maybe, if they're playing Toronto in a 2-7 series, maybe win a game, but they're not winning more than – they're not winning a series at all. They're not anywhere close. But a year away, get Kyrie back, get Durant back, see what happens next year. Lastly, before we get to the Pacers, Magic. It's time for a change. So time for change is what my three words are for the Magic. They're inconsistent. They don't have an identity. And Jonathan Isaac is hurt. Vucevic, I don't love Vucevic as a player. I think that his style of play does not fit what the Orlando Magic have built around it. Markelle Fultz is awesome. Jonathan Isaac is injured, but he's awesome when he's healthy. Aaron Gordon is a player I think could fit with that team without Vucevic, but if they want to keep Vuce, they're going to have to trade Aaron Gordon, I think, this summer. They need a better shooting guard. Evan Fournier is good, not great, very average guy. I'm not in love with this Orlando team. Think they've got potential on the roster, but I also think they have some pieces they need to move to figure out the identity of this team. It's not a knock on Orlando because I don't love the coaching style of Steve Clifford for this team. I think defensively that's fine if they want to get better there, but that's not the area they need to get better at. I think it's offensively. Just a lot of hodgepodge pieces, nothing great, and outside of Jonathan Isaac, this team needs to figure out its identity, whether that's to keep Markelle Fultz or not. So let's move back to the Pacers now. They're in the fifth seed right now on Saturday when I'm recording this, so we'll see where they're at come Monday morning. But for the Pacers, my three words for them: good, not great. A little bit harsh here, yes, but if you look at the Pacers in any of these first round matchups, they do not have the best player on the court. Jason Tatum will be better than any of the Pacers players they have. If you play the Heat, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, arguably better. Of course, the Sixers, Ben Simmons, if healthy, Joel Embiid, better than anybody on the Pacers right now. Oladipo's not healthy. So, I mean, he's healthy to play, but he's not who he was a couple years ago. Brogdon, constantly in and out of the lineup. TJ Warren has gotten banged up recently, but I don't expect that to hold him back. You know, it's just Jeremy Lamb losing him. I think the Pacers were a really strong team, really good at every position, not great. They have really solid depth, but I just don't trust I think that you need great players to win in the playoffs, and depth can only take you so far. Depth is great for the regular season, but when it comes to the playoffs, you need great players. And as much as you guys know, I love Domantas Sabonis. He's a good player. He's not a great player. He might even be a really good player. Same with TJ Warren, Malcolm Brogdon, Oladipo. They're all really good, but they're not great. They're not guys that are going to carry a franchise to an Eastern Conference Finals or an NBA Finals. I mean, the Pacers, if you look back at how the roster was constructed with David West, Roy Hibbert, George Hill, Paul George, Danny Granger, Lance Stephenson, those teams, they had a great player in Paul George. Even though we don't like Paul George because he requested out, he is a great player. He's a top 15, top 20 player for a reason, and he can do it on both ends of the court. Victor Oladipo, we were really believing that he could become that, but unfortunately the injuries have kind of put him back a little bit. So we're looking more forward to next year to see what this team can be, if they can make any moves. But when you have two centers starting, they've been doing a lot better finishing games. I want to see what they do in the playoffs. The lack of bench depth is what I think as far as great talent, because you're just so undersized at that power forward center position. Outside of Sabonis, Turner, they're getting foul trouble. You're really hurting for backup minutes. I mean, you're not going to trust Goga in a playoff series. It's just one of those things where I believe the Pacers can win a first-round series, but I don't know if they will. I think they can. I don't know if they will. So they're good, not great, and I think that the next step for the Pacers is to figure out a way to get a great player on this team, whether it's by trading a player to get up in the draft and get a great player, or, you know, looking into free agency, looking into a trade where a player is available. I think they need just one more great piece to be really a serious threat. I don't know what that is, but I just don't think with this roster construction, the way that it is, that this team will ever be anything more than really good. So anyway, guys, hope you liked that segment. Let me hear your thoughts. Sorry if I was a little too harsh on the boys in blue and gold, but from what I've seen, I just want to see them, you know, they're not on the same level as a lot of these teams ahead of them. The Sixers are an exception because they've had injuries, but Boston, Miami, Toronto, Milwaukee, they've got better players, and that's the difference. Players win series in playoff games, and don't matter how good your team is in the regular season, you got to win in playoff games. And I think that the lack of three-point shooting, the lack of production from behind the arc and at the free throw line will hurt the Pacers in the long run, but I'm still excited to see what they can do. So anyway, that's it for this segment, and let's wrap things up. Alrighty, everybody, we are back, and just want to close things out here by letting you know you can find all of our great work at PacersTalk.net. You can follow me on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. You can follow my co-host Michael Facci at _FACCI. And just let Facci know that his Bradley Beal Washington Wizards aren't going to be doing anything this year, even though they're at ninth place in the Eastern Conference. But that's it, everybody. Long episode. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk to you next week. Peace out, Pacer Nation.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.